This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Ashley Thornburg. Coming up in the second half of today's show, we have a movie review with Matt O'Lean, and we have our news discussion with Dave Thompson. But right now, I am in studio with Main Street's Craig Blumenschein.
Hi, Ashley.
Hello. Thanks for being here.
Absolutely.
Thanks for being on Main Street and for talking about truffles.
Yes. Can't miss that.
This is your opportunity, dear listener, to become a member or to renew your membership in time for Valentine's Day chocolates. And that is because when you invest starting at just $10 a month at 800-359-4145 or online at prairiepublic.org, we will say thank you by sending a box of truffles from Nicole's Fine Pastry to you or someone you care about in the lower 48. So give a gift now by going online at prairiepublic.org or by calling us at 800-359-4145.
When you give to Prairie Public, you are investing in a service that's a little bit different. In fact, it's a lot of bit different than other news sources. First of all, Prairie Public is a nonprofit organization. We're here to serve you, our community. And second, our roots are local. Yes, of course, reporting comes from around the world, but it's the stories from right here that Ashley and I, as Main Street co-hosts, focus on. Take a few moments, if you would, to think about those differences and then become a supporter today. We're hoping you'll want to invest locally, and this is as important of a time. We hope that you give online at prairiepublic.org. Make a one-time gift or set up a monthly contribution on a credit card or checking account. Your monthly gift provides a reliable stream of funding that's so important for Prairie Public. Once again, that phone number is 800-359-4145 or online at prairiepublic.org.
Craig, you are so right to invest in local programming. You want coverage that reflects the life you are actually leading. And hey, speaking of local businesses, happy birthday, happy anniversary to Nicole's Fine Pastry. Been gracing us with the presence for 20 years now. So thank you so much to Nicole's for being involved in this drive. And we want to say thank you to you, our listener, by sending you some truffles. They are delicious and they go with everything. But why are we saying thank you is because you are supporting programming when you become a member at 800-359-4145 or when you click and join at prairiepublic.org. Maybe come in at just $10 a month.
That would be a great thing to do, and what a partnership with Nicole's. But actually, it's hard to believe that we started as one station to eventually grow into the statewide network we are today, and that's because of the great support we have from those in North Dakota.
Absolutely.
And in our region. So again, that phone number quickly is 800-359-4145 or go online, prairiepublic.org. Thank you for your support.
And we are visiting now with Lisa Erickson. She is a writer and a retired high school English teacher and the author of the book No Ordinary Cats, where she tells the story of the many cats who owned her throughout their lives. Lisa, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you, Ashley. I'm delighted to be with you.
So some people would say they have a pet. You would say the pets had you. Why do you twist the phrase that way?
Well, you've probably heard the expression that dogs have masters and cats have staff. I think that's probably fairly apt, but I don't think it matters really what animal holds a place of affection in your heart. If it's part of your family, it's always going to be super important to you and will always be very close to you.
You say in the book that the arrival of a new kitten always makes you introspective. What is it about those impossibly small, adorable creatures that makes you introspective?
You look into their eyes and it's almost as if you can see back into the lives of every cat that has ever been a part of your life, back from the time when I was a little girl, right through to where I am right now. I think it's part of the fact that their presence in your life is a reminder of every other cat that has been a part of my life as well, too.
What do you think it is, Lisa, that we can learn about being human by studying and living with animals?
Oh, there's lots of things we can learn from our pets. We can learn generosity, we can learn kindness, we can learn unconditional love, even though some people may feel that cats are incapable of giving affection or love. I think that's highly, highly wrong. We can learn lots of things from our pets.
Well, let's talk about some of yours. This book is dedicated to Max, Riser, Dilly, Angel, Moonzy, Bandit, Chairman Meow, Fluffity, a few other cats thrown in the mix there. But specifically, the cats that you chose for the time period, they reflect a specific time in your life when you were also parenting. You had small children at home, and these cats were very much a part of your life. So let's talk about some of the lessons that you learned from some of these cats. Early on in the book, you talk about naming. Some names come very easily, and for some, you really have to be paying attention, and that these cats have personalities. How do you pay attention to a cat and get a sense of who they are and what they think?
It starts right from the time the cat enters your life. As I said, some cats' names come very, very easily. It can be just simply a manifestation of their physical appearance. But in some cases, the cat has to be with you for a while before you can really get a sense of its personality and the way in which it interacts, not only with me, but with other cats in the house as well, too. And it becomes easier at that point. Some of my pets' names have been throwbacks to other cats that have been not only in my life, but in my family members' lives as well, too. And we have built upon that. Fluffity, for instance, she was a throwback to one of my grandmother's cats, Fluff. Similar personality, so that's where we got that name.
How was this cat like her?
Oh, feisty, independent, always getting into trouble. And those characteristics, while I admired them in her, caused her to get into all sorts of situations that, you know, in some cases led her to significant harm. And while I admired her feistiness and her independence, qualities which I wish maybe I possessed in more abundance, I was afraid that some of those things that I saw in her would ultimately lead to her demise, which unfortunately it did.
You know, there is this understanding that they are primarily outdoor cats. You provide them with a nice winter shelter, blankets, lots of human scraps for food. They're definitely a spoiled outdoor cat, but it's not quite the same as an indoor cat. They do run into some danger and some other wild animals. Can you talk, Lisa, a little bit about this balance that you have to have as somebody who has pets who still live a little bit of a wild life?
Yeah, this is something I was just talking about in a classroom presentation yesterday. Most of the students in that classroom were farm kids, and unfortunately, they understand that sometimes, especially with animals on a farm, your pets can end up becoming harmed in some way, whether it's through an interaction with a wild animal or with farm machinery, trucks backing out. There's always that element of danger. But in my book, I tried to inject some humor into those interactions, especially those interactions initially between the cats and one specific little raccoon.
Yes, that was quite the funny little raccoon. We're visiting today with Lisa Erickson. She is the author of the book No Ordinary Cats. It's available through Barnes & Noble and on Amazon. Lisa, talking about kids who grew up on a farm and the different sensibility that they have with natural life cycles. You also raised a couple of kids during this time. How did you use the lesson of nature and how sometimes nature is a little mean and use that to help raise your kids and deal with life and death?
Oh, that's a very good question. I think farm children have a better understanding of the fact that things can happen to their pets, to outdoor animals. The old farmer's expression that if you have livestock, you have dead stock. And that can translate into human interactions as well, too. I'm maybe making a generalization here, but perhaps farm children understand perhaps earlier in life that death can happen not only to their pets, but to important people in their lives.
There was one cat's death that you seem to take pretty hard, and this was Riser. And Riser ended up dying a pretty violent death, attacked by some wild dogs. And you feel a sense of guilt, even though what you just said is farm kids have to understand nature is difficult.
I know. And that was probably the part of Riser's death that struck me the most. The fact that I knew this was a possibility. Every time you have outdoor pets, you know this is a possibility. But I knew that the dogs were roaming. I knew that they were a threat. And it bothered me deeply after his death that I hadn't done more to advocate for their safety. And even though a lot of what they do is completely out of my control, I did feel terribly guilty about not having been able to help him.
You talk a lot about, you know, in one particular case, the loss of the cat Bandit, and then there are other cats who stay on the cushions after Bandit died, staying close to the scent, even staying in that same indentation, that this was Bandit's spot. You get a sense that cats can grieve.
Oh, I completely agree. I completely agree with that statement. And it goes back to the idea that people feel that, you know, cats are aloof. They feel no emotion. They are simply there with their little murder mittens and demand food, and that's all they're good for. But I think that's completely wrong. I totally believe that not only cats, but all animals can feel emotion, that they can feel loss, and especially in the loss of a litter mate, I think that's really significant for them.
Let's talk about the times that were the most fun.
There we go.
For having pets. You refer to yourself in the book as the human, you know, and your kids are the tiny humans. Your husband is the deeper voiced human. You squeal with joy sometimes when there is a new kitten brought into your life. Does this go back to the very beginning of your life? Have you always loved cats?
Oh, absolutely. My mom had taken a picture of me when I was 3 years old. I have a little wicker basket, and inside that little wicker basket are two fluffy, adorable, white, bright blue-eyed kittens. And I'm gazing at them with a combination of awe and complete and total love. And that feeling at 3 years old is still with me now.
Wow. Lisa, why did you want to write a book from the perspective of cats?
I had done significant research online when I was thinking about putting this project together. And to the best of my knowledge, I couldn't see too many other offerings out there that were written from the point of view of a cat main character. So I thought it would be interesting to put myself in their paws and for my audience as well, too, to read from the animal's perspective to see if they could identify those sorts of characteristics in their own pets.
What did you learn about yourself in trying to navigate this world from four furry feet?
From four furry feet, yes. I think one of the main things that I've learned from all of my interactions over the years with my feline friends is that sometimes you really just have to give yourself a break. If it's time to take a nap, by all means, give yourself the grace to take a nap. If it's time to disconnect from everyone, by all means, do that. I think we can learn a lot from cats in terms of the way in which they need alone time. And I think we all need that now and again.
Yeah, so many people say you can just be petting a cat and it's great, and then all of a sudden they'll bite you. Other people will say, boy, they really know their boundaries, and when they're done, they're done.
Yeah, that's definitely true as well. I think one of the things that means the most to me, and maybe a lot of animal people feel this way as well too, but especially with cats, if you have earned the trust of a cat, especially a feral cat who has decided to adopt you, you really feel you've accomplished something. I had a pregnant female around the place this summer who was very distant. She would come close in order to be fed, but scooted off the minute I got within her, what she considered her boundaries. But one day we went from being able to scratch her on the back of the ears when she was involved in the food dish, and that evening she was on my lap and she was mine from that point onward. So you really feel you have accomplished something if you have gained the trust and the affection of a cat.
There are some feral and some stray cats in the book, along with raccoons and feral dogs as well. You have this little personality conflict between the house cats and the stray cats. In one case, the house cat. Why would you want to go hunting for food when a human will bring it to you? Why would you scratch in the dirt or the snow to do your business when a human will not only give you a place to do it, but will clean it up for you afterwards?
Yeah, I just wanted to strike that dichotomy between, the true outdoor feral cats and what their perceptions may be of their very pampered indoor associates.
Right, because then the feral cat is, a pampered life is for sissies. You have to get out there and earn your keep and feel your wind in the whiskers. There is this idea of sort of, the rugged individualism versus the, who's controlled by whom sort of element in the book.
Yeah, absolutely there is that. And I think it's part of their way of finding their place in the world too. We've had countless feral cats around here, some of whom have, deigned to be fed by us, and some of them even to the point where, again, you can get them on your lap and they'll be here for a while and disappear again. Even though our cats are technically outdoor cats, they have spent a lot of time indoors, unbeknownst to, well, rather he does know. We say the human with the deep voice doesn't know, but he knew very well that they were in. Yeah, my current batch of kittens as well, too. Every once in a while I am asked, was Walter in the house today? Oh, of course he wasn't. As I'm showing my son a video I took this morning of Walter helping me with my quilting project.
What was the process of writing the book? It reads as if the cats all came into your life just on almost a monthly basis. But obviously, this goes back some years. How did you sort of set up the process of remembering what each of these cats was like in their prime?
Well, the story itself takes place over a span of 3 decades. And I found I initially wanted to write Chairman's story. He was my beloved cat who died last January. And I found I needed to write about his story, his life, in order for it to make sense for me. And then I realized after I had finished writing about Chairman that all of the other cats who had owned me had interesting stories that deserved a voice as well, too. So the book basically wrote itself backwards.
Sure. That sounds like a good process. Did you ever, when you were teaching, talk to your kids about this idea of, writing what you know or writing something that you're passionate about is going to make you a better writer than, let's just say, and I'm just making an assumption here, if you had to write a book about dogs, it you probably wouldn't like it as much.
Oh, absolutely. I think that was one of the things that was foremost in my teaching ELA, especially in creative writing assignments. You never wanted to discourage the rare student who wanted to write about, 6-legged orange creatures who inhabited a planet millions of miles away. They would generally do a good job of that. But for those students who struggled a little bit with the creative writing process, I found that writing about what they knew best, their families, their hobbies, their pets, was a great place to start. Mm.
Do you keep in touch with any of your former students?
Oh, many, many of them through Facebook, other means of social media. I was very lucky. I taught primarily in a small school, and we forge very strong relationships with our students that carry on well beyond graduation day.
Yeah, I was just going to say the word that stands out to my mind about you and what you structure your life around is relationship.
For certain, for certain. Teaching school was one of the most rewarding things that I ever had the opportunity to do. I believe it was Mark Twain who said that if you love what you do, you never work a day in your life. And I completely concur with that. My career was amazingly, overwhelmingly positive, and I'm very grateful for that, and especially the relationships I was able to forge with not only my students, but the support staff and the teaching staff as well.
We talked earlier in this conversation about the thoughts that you had picking names for the cats. What was the process for naming your kids?
Oh, that's a very good question. Family relationships there as well, too. My older son's middle name is for his grandfather, and my younger son's middle name is for my grandfather. So family relationships become important in that regard, too.
Lisa Erickson, the author of No Ordinary Cats. It's available on Amazon and at Barnes & Noble. She is also a retired high school English teacher. Lisa, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Ashley.
This is a great time to be a pledging supporter of Prairie Public. I'm Craig Blumenschein. We are so grateful that you are here. I'm joined by Ashley Thornburg. Ashley, there's never been a better time to pledge support to Prairie Public than right now.
Give us a call, 800-359-4145, or click and join at prairiepublic.org. You know, you just heard this author interview writing from the perspective of a cat. Later on, we'll have our news debrief with Dave. So we have arts, we have emotions, we have hard news. Main Street really covers the whole of the human experience, I would say.
We really do. And we have listener-submitted haikus to share with our group,
Ashley. Yes, we've been doing this haiku challenge during our short and sweet member drive, and we want to share a few of these. So here's one. You don't like chocolate? Here, try these amazing sweets. No? Yay, more for me. Oh, I feel that one.
Here's the one that I like so far. Sweet and rich, smart and satisfying.
Oh, are you talking about me?
Things that make me happy. And you are one of those things, Ashley, of course, but so is chocolate.
Yes. Truffles on my tongue, tuned to tunes of radio, treats of listening. Thanks to Ariel and Fargo for that one.
Always a great treat. Dark chocolate every day. Oh, how I love it. Said Lisa in Bismarck. Yes, dark chocolate every day works for me.
Dark chocolates, best it beats out all other treats. Leave alone the rest. Yes, people are really contributing.
They really are. Truffles, everyone, family, friends, and kids. Yay, it's Valentine's, and it sure is. Send some chocolate truffles to your Valentine.
It is a simple process. You can give us a call at 800-359-4145, or you can click and join at prairiepublic.org. There is still time to contribute to our haiku challenge. You can also find that at prairiepublic.org. And we just are delighted to hear from you because it makes everything that we do possible. All of what you hear is because of membership support. So give us a call now at 800-359-4145 or online at prairiepublic.org.
Ashley, I'm a pretty black and white person.
Okay.
So this haiku gets it for me. I love supporting Prairie Public because they send me truffles. Yum.
Yes.
So this
Get
is the great
the point.
Time to support Prairie Public. 800-359-4145. We'll look for your pledge of support or get online at prairiepublic.org.
Still to come on Main Street, our weekly news discussion with Dave Thompson, and we get a movie review from Matt O'Lean, the new film Living. But first, this news.
For Prairie Public, I'm Danielle Webster. A North Dakota House committee heard a measure that would make changes in the faculty tenure policy at two North Dakota colleges to make it easier for a president to dismiss tenured faculty. Dickinson State University and Bismarck State College were chosen for that demonstration program. DSU President Steve Easton told the House Government and Veterans Affairs Committee,
"We have elevated the faculty rights of non-productive tenured faculty members over students who pay their salaries through tuition. We have elevated the rights of non-productive faculty members over taxpayers who pay a significant portion of their salaries. We have elevated the non-productive, the rights of non-productive faculty members over all the people who work in our institutions who don't have those rights. We have also elevated them above the rights of productive tenured faculty members.
But North Dakota United President Nick Archuleta said tenure protects academic freedom, and college presidents already have flexibility in letting tenured faculty go if the faculty aren't doing their jobs, or there is a campus financial issue.
Could this bill be used to go after faculty who challenge the status quo in the best interest of their students and their institution? Could it have a chilling effect on a faculty member's willingness to shine a light on fraud or misuse of taxpayer dollars at an institution if they know they could be subject to an abrupt non-renewal of their contract?
The committee didn't take immediate action on the bill. A bill to make not wearing your seatbelt in North Dakota a primary offense was heard in the Senate Transportation Committee today. The current law makes being unbuckled a secondary offense, meaning the driver would have to be stopped for another reason before receiving a ticket for not buckling up. The proposal before the committee would also require everyone in the vehicle to be buckled up. Ryan Gellner of West Fargo represents the North Dakota Association of Counties and is a regional coordinator for North Dakota's Vision Zero program. He said the legislature had in the past challenged his group to do more education, and that alone will mean more people will wear their seatbelts.
We've done so much education that just earlier this week, two representatives from NHTSA, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, told me personally that North Dakota's Vision Zero program has the eyes of the nation on it. The amount of education and trainings that we do, the amount of work the Vision Zero regional coordinators are doing, that states across the United States are looking at North Dakota and trying to copy our efforts in training and education. But I'm here to tell you it's not enough. We need your help to save lives, and the only way we can do so is a primary seatbelt law.
No one testified in opposition to the bill. It's Senate Bill 2362. And in the last 7 days, the North Dakota Department of Health and Human Services has confirmed 817 cases of COVID-19 within the state. This averages out to just under 117 new cases per day. The department's coronavirus dashboard says North Dakota's case rate per 100,000 people is 107. For Prairie Public, I'm Danielle Webster.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Ashley Thornburg, and joining me now from our Bismarck studio is News Director Dave Thompson. Dave, thanks for joining us today.
You're very welcome, Ashley.
Another very busy week to work in North Dakota news. Yeah. All right, let's talk about a few bills facing the state legislature right now. Mm-hmm. What is this cleanup abortion bill, and why is cleanup in quotes?
The cleanup is in quotes because that's what they're saying. They're not putting in new abortion restrictions. They're just putting all the abortion restrictions into one bill because they're in several laws. So they want a cleanup area where you can basically say, okay, they're in one bill. So it is abortion is permitted in cases of rape, incest, or when the mother's life is threatened, but abortions are prohibited after 6 weeks in North Dakota. So that's one of the things. And I know they're working on something to do with doctors and how they can basically say, hey, we proved that somebody was raped or somebody was the victim of incest or that the mother's life was truly in danger when we performed the abortion. It's called a positive proof or a positive defense.
How many bills are we talking about when you say trying to put them all in one? Are we talking they're in five or six or they're in dozens of bills?
No, it's about five or six.
Okay. Still, it sounds like quite a task to get them all put into one. What kind of process is that?
Well, it took a number of legislators working, putting their heads together. And then it's also a matter of cutting and pasting. You can cut and paste things from other laws that will fit into this. And even with the fact that they were saying there are no new restrictions in here, there was still opposition in the state Senate when it came up for a vote.
Mm-hmm.
Four legislators voted against the measure, three Democrats and one Republican.
Has there been any discussion when you talk about saying that it would still be permitted in cases of rape? Have there been discussions about the number of people who don't even who don't have the strength to come forward to talk about rape right away?
Yeah, there's been some discussion about that, but that really didn't figure into the final bill as written. And what actually is an overarching thing is still the Supreme Court has not ruled on that lawsuit against the state about is there a right to abortion in North Dakota's constitution. That ruling has not yet come out. So this whole thing is kind of still a little bit up in the air.
Okay. There's also a bill right now that is requiring fetal growth film to be shown in North Dakota schools. And this passed in the House by a pretty substantial margin, 60-34.
Yes, it did. And this is about a three-minute film, and it could be animated. And the thing that was shown in committee is an animated sperm heading toward an egg. And when a sperm and egg get together, then there's a bright light and says, this is where life begins. So that was one of the films that was shown. It has basically been done by, you know, a known pro-life anti-abortion group who has offered to donate that film if North Dakota is going to use it in its classrooms.
Where does this fit in with some of the people who are pushing for abstinence-only sex education? And then how would a film like this fit?
You know, the funny
that?
Thing is the abstinence-only sex education crowd has not been very loud this session. But they're talking about this as part of lifestyle or life experience teaching. So it's beyond just sex education.
Hmm. Has there been any opposition from people who say that not all scientists agree exactly where that life begins? Some put
yes,
that metric have. A little bit farther down the line.
Yes, there has been opposition to that. That's why I think when it does get to the House, it could be an interesting debate because there'll be a lot more probably honed arguments, if you want to put it that way.
Where is the Department of Public Instruction on this?
So far, it's been relatively quiet. But some of the people who don't like the bill say curriculum should be a role of local school boards and the Department of Public Instruction, not mandated by the legislature. So that's another argument against this.
Right, because if they open up this from the legislature, does that pave the way for the legislature to demand other sorts of policies to be taught in school?
That may happen, and that's what they're worried. There's a phrase you hear in a legislative session a lot. It's called camel's nose under the tent.
Mm-hmm.
And you heard that argument.
All right. You had a story this week about medical marijuana edibles rejected once again.
Yes. And this has been the most interesting discussion because there was a thought that they would do something for those people who can't smoke it or who can't get it from those CBD oils, that maybe it's edible. But there is a substantial group, especially in the House, that doesn't like the idea that children might get a hold of this stuff, even though it's not packaged very well.
Gummy bears or something at times.
Actually, yeah, but there's a new requirement about making sure they're packaged that so they don't look like gummy bears. Maybe they look more like gummy bears when you're taken out of the package. But the thing is that people would have to leave it in a package, and the package is not really that enticing to children. However, one of the people who argued in the House said, I don't care. A five-year-old would put anything in his or her mouth. So that's the argument against
it. That is how five-year-olds work.
Right.
Yeah. What's the next step on this one, or is it just now it's done?
Well, that's never done because there are certain delayed bills. You can bring a delayed bill later in the session if you can get some kind of agreement on something. And that might happen. That's something to listen for, and that's one thing we as reporters have now been really conditioned to listen for. If you hear there's going to be a meeting of the Delayed Bills Committee, you go, because you never know.
Yeah.
Some issue like this might come up.
Right. Big story out of Grand Forks. There has been a substantial change to some development that was on the way, and this is in regards to the Chinese-owned corn plant, the Fuffing plant.
Fuffing plant, yeah, the corn milling plant. The company already owns 370 acres north of Grand Forks. They were going to build this milling plant. But comes the U.S. Air Force and saying, we oppose this because we have security concerns because it's China owns the companies.
Mm-hmm.
So I know our congressional delegation not in favor of this, and they're concerned about China getting their eyes on the Grand Forks Air Force Base.
Mm-hmm.
So now it looks like there's an attempt at least to look at an American-based company that might come in and build a corn milling plant there.
Now, the city council gave initial approval for this about a year ago. What was the Air Force's position at that time?
Unstated. the Air Force's position was unstated. Then they went through what is called a CFIUS review, and that's the Committee on Foreign Investment in the U.S. And the CFIUS review said they couldn't really do anything because they didn't find anything wrong. However, the Air Force did finally come out, and there is possibly some, because of urging by our congressional delegation, for them to come out and say something. And they finally came out and say something and said, we oppose this because it's too close to the Grand Forks Air Force Base.
Okay. Do you get the sense, is it specifically because it is a Chinese-based company? Would they have the same concerns if it was Costa Rica, for example?
It's China because China definitely owns companies. You know, they're state-owned companies, and that's the worry. And apparently there's at least some, you know, facile evidence that they have been using some companies to do some spying on certain countries.
Right. There's a lot of growing evidence to suggest that.
And, of course, here comes the national story about this balloon, the balloon that's over the skies of Montana.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like a very huge balloon, and they're worried about that being used to spy on the United States. The Chinese government says, no, that's not what's going on.
Yikes. There was a loss this week for both UND hockey fans and broadcasting fans,
right.
Travis Dunn.
That was sad.
Yeah.
If you ever listened to a UND hockey game and Travis Dunn was doing it, you understood his passion for the game, you understood his knowledge of the game, and you
understood he was a national champion himself.
National champion himself. And also, you know, he bleeds green, if you want to say that. UND
right?
Green, yes.
Yeah. Did you know him? You're only a little older than him.
I'm only a little older than he. I did not, but, you know, I watched a lot of hockey games when I was at UND.
Yeah.
And he would play, you know, he'd play on the team, and I'd watch him and kind of marveled at the fact that he could skate. I could not.
I
always tell people that I did try out for a local hockey team.
Mm.
I was too slow to be a goaltender.
Dave, what are you working on coming up?
Well, first off, I'd like to tell people who listen to Main Street to tune in to Legislative Review this week. We have Representative Mike LaFleur of Dickinson, and he talks about some of the big issues that are coming up. Number one is this tenure bill he has that would be a pilot project for Dickinson State and Bismarck State College about maybe changing the rules of tenure for professors.
Hmm.
He also has the idea of converting the state retirement plan from defined benefit to defined contribution. He talks about that, and he talks about that they're looking at maybe some other compromise angles on that. And he also did talk about tax relief, which I thought was kind of interesting because it appears that they think they're coming to more of a solution, a final bill on tax relief.
Mm.
So we'll have to listen to that.
Yeah. Remind our listeners when and where to tune into this.
It will be at 6:30 p.m. tonight on Prairie Public's radio service. That's Central Time. 7:30 p.m. tonight on our television service. That's, again, Central Time. And 6 o'clock on Saturday night on our television service of Prairie Public.
All right. We check in with News Director Dave Thompson once a week to talk about news. But Dave, before I let you go, just another little minute or so here to remind people about what else they can get when they tune in to Prairie Public right now.
Can we say Nicole's Truffles? And
We
can say it many
times. Do we
times?
Even need to say more than that?
I don't think we need to say more than that because it is short and sweet drive time.
Yes.
Go to prairiepublic.org or call 800-359-4145. And for an amount which is $10 a month, you can receive a box of these wonderful truffles, these wonderful Nicole's truffles.
Yes, and in addition, you are also supporting shows like Main Street, Legislative Review, All Things Considered coming up next here. We've got Marketplace, all of the weekend programs that you enjoy, get a little break from some of the news sometimes and have a little laughter with Away With Words or Wait, Don't Tell Me. Whatever is your reason for supporting, go online to prairiepublic.org or give us a call, 800-359-4145. A lot of people, especially during the short and sweet drive, really love that website option because you can type up a little poem, you can get this little card, you can send your comments along, and we really do read those comments. So whatever investment level works for you, go online to prairiepublic.org or give us a call at 800-359-4145.
When you hear arts programming here on Prairie Public, know that it is supported in part by the North Dakota Council on the Arts, and we thank them.
When you hear the fanfare, that means it's time again to go to the movies with our movie reviewer, Matt Olien. Matt, welcome back to Main Street. This week, it's a post-World War II London drama called Living.
Living, starring Bill Nighy, who is up for Best Actor, his first nomination ever. He's wonderful in the part. This is based on Akira Kurosawa's 1952 film, Ikiru, which is about a civil servant who discovers he has terminal cancer and does something about it to make his last days worthwhile. So similarly plotted. I'm not giving anything away. I mean, he is terminal. He is a very repressed, subdued, very British, very unemotional man who has worked in the utilities and parks and recreation department for years and years.
He's a bureaucrat.
He's a bureaucrat, right. And there's some great scenes early on where files come up to the office and they just get put away. Nothing gets done. And there is a group of ladies that want a children's playground built in an old bombed-out site. So this is right after the war, 1949-50. My clue that it takes place in 49 is the movie I Was a Male War Bride is playing at a theater starring Cary Grant, and that came out that very year. So, you know, it's one of these films where, you know, a man or a woman goes through a metamorphosis. They suddenly change because things are black and white. And so what he does with his remaining time, you have to go see the film. It's a very subdued, very subtle film. It's a very short movie, much shorter than Kurosawa's film was. And I liked how they use a kind of a narrative device about three quarters of the way through the film where you're a little like, what's going on? And then you realize what's going on. So I like that a lot. Amy Lou Wood is very good as one of his coworkers, a young woman, young single woman. She plays Miss Harris, and they kind of become friends. And it becomes kind of his outlet for living and using those last days to the best of his ability. But Bill Nighy is the star here. He's subtle. He's tragic. He's sentimental. And the film never – I always talk about in my reviews, Craig, sometimes there's that fine line between sentimentality and mawkish in a movie, and it never goes over that line. There are many moments where this film could have just been – let's say in American hands, it could have gone over the top, sentimentality, signaling the audience, hey, you need to feel this way at this moment.
Sure.
And it does not do that. And I will say the final shot of this movie is priceless. The way they set up the final shot of the movie through some dialogue and through some other things about children playing and how children react to things in life is priceless, and I loved how they set up the final shot. So overall, I like this better than I thought I was going to like it, and it's very short. It is not a long film. It goes by quickly, and it's very subtle and reserved.
Even though it wasn't over the top, Matt, how did you feel when you left? This is a movie about life's inertia.
It plays on your emotions, but in a very subtle way. It sneaks up on you. They really do a good job. The director, I want to credit the director, Oliver Hermanis. He does a really good job of, as I said, not overplaying the emotion, not overplaying the sentiment. You know, we've all gone to these movies, Craig, let's just call them cancer films, and that's what they are. And sometimes it's overdone. It's overdone the emotions you're supposed to feel. It's sad, et cetera, et cetera. But when you leave the theater, you feel different. I felt different when I left the theater. So did my two friends, Christine Hoper and Brent Brandt. We went to the Fargo Theater, and it's just a nice little film. It's not going to win tons of awards. I think Bill has a shot. He could be an outside, upset the apple cart guy in the Oscar race, which people think is between Brendan Fraser, Austin Butler, and Colin Farrell. But it's a subtle, wonderful performance as this lifelong civil servant, and I liked how they just didn't play on your emotions. They let it sneak up on you.
It seems to me this movie, for those who have seen it, hasn't gotten a lot of play yet, has been very well received.
Yes, very well received. I think it's 96% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is, if people don't know, that's the critics' site,
yeah,
typically. I think it's the kind of film that if people are looking for something a little bit different during this Oscar season, you know, if they don't want to see Top Gun Maverick again or Avatar The Way of Water again, this is very, very unlike that. It's a human emotion film. I tend to respond more to human drama, the drama that we see on close-ups of faces in movies. That's always been what I've been more interested in than science fiction or things like that. So, yeah, I liked it better than I thought I would. It's not going to, you know, it's not going to win Best Picture or anything like that. It's not nominated for Best Picture, but let's see if Bill Nighy can upset the apple cart and pull off an upset for Best Actor. I don't think he's going to win, but it's a deserved nomination.
It's a movie I want to see, Matt. Challenge you with a trivia question.
Mm-hmm.
I think this might be easy for you. Who currently holds the most Oscars for a living person?
John Williams.
Correct. Now, he's the second most nominated person in Academy Awards history behind
Walt Disney.
Well done, Matt. We've been to the movies with our movie reviewer, Matt Olien.
Oh, hi, Betty. How are you? Yeah, me too. Valentine's Day is coming up, and I'm just looking at these dating sites. That picture is obviously fake. You can't do that on a snowmobile. Yes, I have actually gone out with a couple of them. Last week, this guy said, "You look pretty hot, almost as hot as the girl I dated last week." Then he asked me to invest in his crypto fund. Oh, wait. This just popped up. Prairie Public is doing a short and sweet. Yeah, you make a donation and they send you cocoa truffles. I'll invest in Prairie Public. And I'll tell you one thing, Betty. Cocoa truffles never say anything stupid.
Become a sustaining member of Prairie Public right now at prairiepublic.org. And for your $10 a month donation, we'll send you a one-pound box. If you give more, you get even more truffles.
This is Dakota Datebook for February 3rd. It should be obvious to drivers that a car is no match for a train. But the number of accidents at railroad crossings steadily increased in the early years of the 20th century. At that time, few crossings had signs or warning lights. Drivers were urged to pause and look before crossing the tracks. On this date in 1923, the railroad commissioners announced that some progress had been made in reducing accidents. From 1921 to 1922, such accidents had dropped by 30%, even though the number of licensed vehicles had increased by 10%. They believed that the Railroad Commission's Safety First campaign played a role in the reduction. With a commitment to further reducing the danger of railroad crossings, the commission designated the week of February 5th as Safety First Week. Churches, schools, and public clubs and organizations were urged to promote safety at the crossings. A public meeting was scheduled at the Bismarck Auditorium to kick off the week. The commission noted that the demands of modern transportation placed lives in jeopardy. According to federal records, from 1915 to 1923, almost 2,000 people were killed at railroad crossings. 86% of those fatalities involved automobiles. Today, most crossings have signage, signal lights, and arms that block vehicles from crossing. One might think that fatalities would be a thing of the past. Unfortunately, that is not the case. In 2018, a driver waited for a train to pass and then proceeded to cross. A train coming in the other direction had been blocked from view, and the result was fatal. In 2021, two people were killed in separate accidents. In both cases, the victims went around the safety barriers in an effort to beat the trains. Police pleaded with the public to stay behind the barriers and wait for trains to pass. Today's Dakota Datebook was written by Carol Butcher. I'm Merrill Pepcorn.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding by Humanities North Dakota, North Dakota's largest lifelong learning community.
We are closing in on the end of this short and sweet member drive. It wraps up tomorrow. This is our last weekday, our last Main Street during the short and sweet member drive. Give us a call now at 800-359-4145 or click and join at prairiepublic.org. Your opportunity to support programming that you enjoy and your opportunity to make it possible. Give us a call now, 800-359-4145, or click and join at prairiepublic.org. Show your romantic side. Get a box of cocoa truffles for yourself or share it with someone you love.
Short and sweet.
Yes.
We like that. But because this pledge drive, Ashley, is short and sweet, it doesn't diminish how important it is to become a pledging, supporting member of Prairie Public. If you pledge right now, you'll help pay and support reporting from all over the world, of course, across the country, of course, but especially within our region, within North Dakota, right here at home. The work you and I get to do every single day, we're user-supported, and that's why pledging members are so important to what we do. Your donation will pay for on-the-ground local coverage. We'll keep you connected. That's our pledge to what's happening in North Dakota and the Prairie region. Ashley, we're hoping people give us a call right now, 800-359-4145, or getting online at prairiepublic.org and getting access to the incredibly tasty truffles.
Craig, I love what you said a moment ago, the work that we get to do. It's not the same as the work that we have to do. You and I both very much love our jobs.
Sure beats working.
Right? Turns out the people in this area are super fascinating, talented,
incredibly
passionate, interesting, engaging people. And we love to feature your intelligence, your passion, whatever it is that keeps you up at night. We love featuring that on Main Street. We want to hear from as many stories that we can tell. We want to hear from our members because that's what makes it possible for us to get to do the work that we do. But hey, if that's not reason enough, chocolate. Chocolate, chocolate, chocolate. You love it. And you'll get some when you call 800-359-4145 or when you click and join at prairiepublic.org.
It's important to do it right now. We're hoping people don't procrastinate, don't put it off. Get online or give us a call. We can ship chocolate anywhere, and especially here in North Dakota. Yeah, in the lower 48. But North Dakota, I don't think it's going to melt in anybody's mailbox anytime soon. So this is a great time to take advantage of this wonderful partnership we have with Nicole's Fine Pastries.
800-359-4145. Coming up Monday on the show, we learn about an upcoming class via Humanities ND, Contested Histories, Conflicted Space, Understanding Historic Sites and Monuments. That's coming up Monday on Main Street. Until then, enjoy the rest of your day.